Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Shield of the Pack by Philippa Norcross and Michael Anderle. Narrated by Amanda Ronconi. Chapter 1. I'm going to miss this. Maggie speared another piece of sausage on the end of her fork and popped it in her mouth. Ah, the truth comes out. You were only ever with me for my cooking. Cole jibed. He was leaning back in his chair with his hands wrapped around his coffee mug. No, Maggie protested, then pretended to reconsider. Maybe. They laughed. Cole sat forward, put his mug on the table, picked up the pancake platter, and offered it to Maggie. When she shook her head, he selected one for his plate, then replaced the platter. I'm sure we could arrange a friendly brunch now and then. I know what your eating habits will go back to now that we're not dating. It would arguably be a humanitarian service to feed you. Maggie stuck her tongue out at him. Think of the hit to the restaurant business. They'll be so happy to have me back. Cole snickered and shook his head. Ah, but your bottom line, Maggie. You sure Pharaoh's on board with us breaking up? She exhaled through her nose and laughed, wiping up the last of the ketchup on her plate with the final piece of sausage and consuming it before responding. Pharaoh's got nothing to do with it, as you well know. Her tone was considerably more serious. We've been rocky for a good long while, and I think it's time.
Fair enough.
He nodded, then wrapped his hands around his coffee mug again.
I won't lie and say I won't miss you.
I'd be lying if I said the same, Maggie admitted. We've had a good run, but, well, to be honest with you, I think part of it was that you were there when I came out of my brain fog after Matt died, which isn't a great basis for a relationship at all. So I'll cop to that and apologize. Nobody deserves to be a rebound. Cole shrugged one shoulder.
Apology accepted. I was still under Mom's thumb at the time and didn't know how much. I'm sure that messed with my relationship priorities, too. You were an escape to some degree, and that's not fair of me to put on you, either. I'm sorry for that.
Forgiven. She reached across the table for the coffee pot, which Cole nudged within her reach. As she refilled her mug, she said, To everything there is a season, right? We were there for each other when we needed someone, and now that time has passed, it's time to move on.
We're not going to talk about the fact that you're doing incredibly shady research on my DNA and magical signature, she thought, and stole a glance at him as she spooned sugar into her mug.
Given that he's taking this awfully well, I'd say that's probably a good idea,
Matt commented. Indeed, the last few days had been surprisingly uneventful. Maggie had wrapped up a harrowing case of an actual haunting in Vancouver. She'd discovered Cole's clandestine research into her magic and genetics the last day they were there. Then she'd received a text message from Liam McMillan, the bitter fur shifter she'd met only weeks before, who believed Maggie was his fated mate. He urgently asked for her help. She and her entourage, Cole, his father Shalton, and Maggie's best friend Pharaoh, were now back in Joseph's Landing, having been granted safe passage back to Ontario by the Bitterfur Pack. How Bitterfur's alpha, Drew Canuck, had convinced the incredibly territorial and very unfriendly Silvertails to back off long enough for Maggie to get home, she didn't know, but she wasn't complaining. In any case, the Saturday morning brunch and breakup were going remarkably well, as Matt had said. Positively, shockingly, amicably, truth be told. Even if her old English teacher, Mrs. Lawrencell, would have rapped her knuckles for superfluous adverb usage.
For what it's worth, I hope we can stay friends, Cole added. I wasn't kidding when I floated the idea of occasional brunches. You are the best person I know to test new dishes on. Maggie snorted. I think that's a compliment. Let's play it by ear. I'm not averse to the idea, but it'd probably be wise to give ourselves some time to let the dust settle before trying to be friends again. Otherwise, it'll be back to Romance City before you know it. At least it will be for me. I'm a rubber band that way, always snapping back into old habits.
Hard not to. I get that. That's fine by me.
He drank more coffee. Then a new thought made his eyebrows twitch.
Are you planning to continue working with my father?
She eyed him, trying to gauge why he was asking. I'm already getting paranoid, Matt, she complained. He has every right to ask if I'm still going to hang out with his dad. That's not exactly normal ex-girlfriend territory.
Matt pointed out, sneaking samples of your DNA and magic isn't exactly normal boyfriend territory. You have every reason to be paranoid.
I suppose.
Yes, she answered, plain and simple. Your dad's an excellent resource and we work well together. I'd like to continue working with him. Does that bother you?
Cole shook his head.
No. I'd be more bothered if you stopped seeing him because of me.
Magnanimous of him, Matt muttered. Maggie admonished.
Now you're being grumpy. I know we got off the benefit of the doubt train a while back, but let's not sprint off into camp Cole is the big bad just yet.
Sure, whatever you say. Just don't come crying to me when he goes all psycho on your ass.
If Cole tries to sneak into my bathroom while I'm showering, I will smell him instantly. That new aftershave carries from 5 blocks down.
Thanks, she said to Cole, leaving Matt to continue grumbling in the back of her head.
I appreciate that.
It's not like he and I are on the best of terms anyway.
Cole gestured with his cup.
It's no skin off my nose in the grand scheme of things.
Cole, she began, then made a face. You guys were making so much progress.
He sighed, then put the mug down. I know you're going to say talk to him, and I get why you're saying it, but I can't promise I will.
He traced a finger around the mug's rim, staring at it.
Think how complicated it would be if your dad came back.
He looked up at her and winced.
Sorry. I don't mean to be insensitive, playing that card. But you see what I mean, I hope?
Maggie pursed her lips, then sighed in turn and nodded.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
She drained her mug and set it beside her plate.
So, we're good?
We're good, he assured her.
I mean, as much as anyone breaking up is good.
He reached across the table and offered her his hand, palm up. When she placed her hand in his, he clasped it with a smile.
I care about you, Maggie.
I've been pretty taken with you since you piqued my interest with your strange magical signature. I hope we can stay friends.
With a little time, I think we will. Maggie squeezed his hand gently and smiled. I'll be in touch from wherever I end up, eventually.
He let go of her hand and stood, clearing the dishes.
That's right. You're headed out sooner rather than later, aren't you?
Tomorrow, she confirmed. By the time I finish helping the Bitterfurs, I hope I'll have settled on a place to go for good.
Don't forget to write, he teased her, since there's no cell service up there.
Hopefully I won't be gone that long, she grimaced. Liam's message was urgent. I'm honestly surprised he agreed to the extra couple of days. I thought he would insist that I come immediately.
Shifter territory is big, Cole shrugged. I'm sure he understands travel takes time.
He washed and dried his hands, then came around the table and went with Maggie to the living room, where he picked her coat off the hook and held it for her to put on.
Stay safe, he urged,
suddenly quiet and solemn.
Please?
I'll do my best like I always do.
Maggie slipped her arms into the sleeves,
then zipped up the front. She turned and opened her arms.
One more hug?
One more hug, he agreed, and wrapped his arms around her. It seemed to last forever, and no time at all. When she finally pulled away and left the apartment, the goodbyes felt cursory, even superficial, not meaningless, but awkward.
You okay?
Matt asked, as she headed for the office with her collar turned up against the cold wind.
Yes? No?
If we put the spectrum of yes to no from, say, Vancouver to Cape Breton, I'm somewhere around, well, around Joseph's Landing.
Maggie tapped snow off her boots in the entryway of their office building, then ascended the stairs.
She'd dropped her bags off here the night before, not wanting to haul them from her place to Cole's, then to the office. All the rest of her stuff was already in storage, awaiting shipment to wherever she ended up going. Month end would be while she was away, and she'd figured, why pay rent if you weren't living there? It meant she would sleep in the office tonight, but it wasn't like she'd never done that before. She heard Pharaoh tapping on her laptop keyboard before she got to the door. She knocked to give the Naga a warning, then came in.
Morning.
Good morning. Tea? Pharaoh looked up to meet Maggie's eyes.
Or are you all caffeinated up from brunch?
Tea would be nice. Maggie hung her coat and shed her boots, then went to sit on the couch.
How goes the hunt?
She deputized Pharaoh to research new places to live while Maggie was away. She'd even authorized her to choose one. Pharaoh planned to come with Maggie wherever she went, which honestly made Maggie feel guilty, so the least she could do was let Pharaoh pick somewhere that she wanted to live.
It goes.
Pharaoh was noncommittal as she stood to reheat the kettle.
If I'm honest, I hope your trip smooths some feathers, or rather, some fur. It's difficult to find magical communities that don't overlap with shifter packs with ties to the Silvertails.
Well, I might smooth things over with the bitter furs, but I can't promise anything with the Silvertails. They're notoriously grumpy. That's probably why they own so much territory. Pharaoh poked through a tea box, then picked a couple of bags and plopped them into mugs.
How are you doing?
I'm fine.
This was the breakup brunch, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And?
Maggie sighed.
He took it well.
We both knew it wasn't working anyway. We're in different places, you know. We haven't been getting along as well as we did before, even accounting for the honeymoon phase, so it's fine, it's the right decision, and it's much better to get it over with before I leave.
I'm glad to hear that.
Pharaoh poured water into the mugs, then brought them to the coffee table where she sat beside Maggie.
But it's not really what I asked.
Maggie side-eyed her as she accepted the steaming mug.
I'm fine, she repeated.
Just need to make sure I've got everything for the trip. I so rarely travel like this that I'm liable to forget my head if it's not on my shoulders. She sipped her tea, and it scalded the roof of her mouth. She exclaimed, and her eyes teared up. Before she knew it, she was sobbing. Pharaoh took the mug out of her hands before she spilled tea everywhere. Chapter 2. Maggie vaguely heard the soft clunk of Pharaoh setting the mugs on the coffee table. Much more pressing were her attempts to get her breathing under control. She was fine, goddammit. It was no use. Pharaoh's arms wrapped around her, and Maggie cried harder, leaning into her friend's embrace.
I don't know what's wrong with me,
she managed, between hiccuping sobs.
It wasn't working. It's the right thing to do, and with all the stuff he's been saying again that sounds like it's right out of his mother's mouth, it's...
Overwhelmed, she curled her fingers into the fabric of Pharaoh's shirt and let herself cry. Pharaoh ran her hand down Maggie's back and rested her chin on top of Maggie's head.
Doesn't mean it doesn't hurt, sweetie, she said softly. He was one of the first hopeful choices you made after... Well, after Matt. Maggie hiccuped again, all too aware of how much she was soaking Pharaoh.
I know, but I know better. Relationships aren't always a matter of knowing better.
There was mild amusement in her friend's tone.
The heart wants what the heart wants.
Apart from the unfortunate, megalomaniacal fleas Cole picked up from his mother, he was a good partner to you in many ways. He might have been what you needed at the time, and that's okay. You don't need to beat yourself up for that.
Maggie's sinuses ached from crying, but the flood had stopped.
She sat up slowly, rubbing her eyes, then took the tissue Pharaoh offered her from the box on the table.
Thanks.
She wiped her face and blew her nose, then let her hands fall into her lap.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
I usually am, Pharaoh teased, smiling and nudging Maggie's knee with hers.
You don't have to beat yourself up for getting together with Cole in the first place, or for feeling bad about breaking up with him. It's okay to be sad about what you're leaving behind, while still knowing it's the right choice.
Yeah. She tossed the tissue into the wastebasket next to the couch, picked up her tea and took another sip. It was a far more reasonable temperature.
Thank you. I needed to hear that. Anytime. Now drink your tea, then think about something else for a while.
Maggie did that, spending the next 20-odd minutes going over everything she'd take the next day. It wasn't much. She was traveling even lighter than she had the last time she'd visited the Bitter Furs, which meant she needed to ensure she had everything she needed. All I'm missing is road snacks. Her mug rested against her jaw as she stared at the checklist on the legal pad in her other hand. I guess it's off to the grocery store with me.
I'll be here when you get back.
Pharaoh waved from her desk. Maggie headed out with her hands shoved in her coat pockets and her purse slung over her shoulder. She still felt shaky, like her insides were jello that hadn't quite set. It didn't help that she kept running into people she knew on the street, people she had to stop and say goodbye to because even if the official story was that she was going on a trip, if she ended up relocating without returning to Joseph's Landing, she wasn't sure if she'd see these people again. She didn't want to tell any of them that, and the aversion got considerably stronger as she came up to the elementary school. It was Saturday, but the playground was packed. The snow-clearing crews always made a big hill in the back corner of the staff parking lot. Kids from all around the neighborhood brought sleds and saucers and crazy carpets. They flew across the packed snow of the empty parking lot and narrowly avoided the posts and dividers. These were the people Maggie would miss the most. She cared deeply for the children of Joseph's Landing, having grown up here like them. Saving almost a dozen of them from a magical eugenics kidnapping ring the year before didn't hurt either. Between the kids and her other ties to the community, Joseph's Landing was home. She and Matt had made it so after coming back from Muni and finding their dad gone and their mom drinking herself into a stupor. Once Danielle had disappeared too, Maggie and Matt had set up Great Lakes investigations, and the rest was history. She spotted Helena Chatham, standing proud in her bright pink snowsuit at the top of the hill, with an equally pink crazy carpet in one hand. She was waving the piece of plastic around wildly, watching one of her friends go down the hill and cheering them on, laughing and yelling. Maggie's heart contracted. She closed her eyes, tucked her face into her collar, and moved on before she started to cry again. Was it like this for Dad? She wondered, trying and failing to block out the rambunctious noises of the kids. Skipping from place to place, telling himself it was better for everyone if he left? Matt didn't answer, and the thought was too unsettling for her to dwell on. David St. Clair was about the last person she wanted to emulate, but here she was, dabbling in pack politics and disappearing from her home without telling anyone. It was for her safety. But then,
Maybe he'd thought the same thing. She sniffed harshly and blinked hard, willing the tears away. She was extra emotional because of the breakup. And these things hit shifters harder than most. That was all this was. Extra hormones. Horror moans, even. She resolved to add at least half a dozen chocolate bars to her road trip snack haul and determinedly forged on toward the store. The morning was unseasonably cold, which felt like a bad omen. The tips of Maggie's fingers and toes were already chilled, and her breath was turning into a white fog instead of faint mist. Pharaoh gripped her travel mug of tea tightly, even though there was no way it would heat her hands through the double-walled glass and her woolen mittens. "You have everything?" Maggie checked the straps on her backpack, which were tightly secured, and nodded. "If I don't, well, I'm shit out of luck." She tried to crack a smile. Pharaoh didn't smile.
"You know, you don't have to help them."
"I know, but also, yes, I do. Liam got me out of there alive. I owe it to him to at least try to help." Maggie shook herself and tightened her scarf. "I'll let you know when I arrive."
"Please do."
Pharaoh stepped back.
"I hate traveling on the Schlia Fallischja.
Gazoon tight." Maggie had taken a couple of steps away. She glanced over her shoulder. "Is that what you call it? I've always called it La Voie Inaperçue. Although the universal name is the Via Invisibilia because everything old magic is Latin.
Or Arabic."
Pharaoh chuckled, and Maggie was glad to hear it.
"Yes, that's what my family called it. Scots Gaelic."
"I didn't know you were Scottish. I always thought you were like Persian or something."
"Because I'm a Naga?"
"Well, yeah." Maggie blushed. "Sorry, I never really thought about how stereotypical that was." Pharaoh shrugged.
"I'm used to it. Honestly, it amuses me more than anything else. But no, my family's roots go back to the Gaels. You know those snakes that St. Patrick drove out of Ireland?"
She winked.
"You're joking."
"You're not joking." Maggie laughed.
"Oh,
that's a way better note to leave on. Thanks, Pharaoh."
"Glad to provide some comic relief."
Pharaoh sipped her tea.
"But I hate walking the unseen path, so be careful, even if it's only to smooth my scales."
"I will be," Maggie promised. "I gotta go." Pharaoh nodded and took a hand off her cup to wave.
"See you when you get back."
"See you," Maggie echoed. Then she hiked her backpack straps up to hook her thumbs through them, turned, and headed toward the forest. Walking the unseen path was something almost any magical could do. All it required was huge amounts of focus. As far as the history books went, it had been created, or pioneered, or discovered, by magicians in the ancient Middle East, possibly the Babylonians. The Europeans had co-opted it in the Middle Ages, which was why it was generally known as the Via Invisibilia. Otherwise, it probably would have ended up being something in Arabic. Just because every magical person could walk the unseen path in theory didn't mean it was easy. Everyone learned the basics of the technique because it was incredibly useful in evading amagicals in a pinch. Still, most people didn't know how to do it beyond doing the equivalent of ducking into an alley that wasn't there. To walk the unseen path, you had to use your magic on yourself in its most basic form, as simple energy, not in the focus that most people would learn. If you were a fire mage, it had nothing to do with fire. If you were a time witch, it had nothing to do with time. Matter manipulation sorcerers had an easier time because it was essentially matter manipulation. You took yourself out of reality, normal space-time, and slipped sideways into the in-between bits, turning yourself into waves instead of particles. That was if people were light, which they were not, but to cast the spell, you had to think of yourself that way. You acted on the building blocks of your existence and prayed to whatever god you liked that you wouldn't end up three fingers short or having swapped minds with your travel companion or any other horrible teleportation accident. It was complicated. The magical theory was way beyond most people. Still, it was the foundation on which extremely advanced matter manipulation mages had created the magical highways. They were the quickest way to traverse thousands of kilometers in minutes, especially if you didn't want anyone tracking you, which Maggie most certainly did not. Maggie paused a couple of hundred meters from Pharaoh, standing at the side of the road. She drew a deep breath, then closed her eyes as she let it out in a long, slow hiss. Her time magic came in handy when it came to walking La Voix Inaperçue, but she hadn't done it in ages. It was a huge energy drain, hence the road trip snacks, and she had no idea what she was walking into, teleporting into, quantum physicsing into. "Stop procrastinating and cast the damn spell," Matt rolled his non-existent eyes. "Easy for you to say," she retorted. "I might lose you in here." Maggie's nerves doubled as Matt realized she might be right. How was Maggie to keep hold of him? They still didn't know how exactly he was in her head. Maggie took another step forward, cutting off their train of thought and growing panic. She cast the spell. Her stomach lurched, her head spun, and her back teeth felt slick, like she was about to throw up. The universe jittered unsettlingly behind her closed eyelids, and it felt like she was stepping into a void, like she'd missed a step and was about to tumble into the sky. Her foot landed on solid ground. Ice fragments crunched under the sole of her boot. The rest of her senses followed in rapid succession. Shouting, the sound of wood burning, heavy footfalls, the zing of spells flying. Holy shit, flying right past her ear. She threw herself to the ground, eyes still closed, and swore under her breath. So much for not getting ambushed. Chapter 3. Maggie peeked up through her fingers at the scene. Snow everywhere, the middle of a forest, a couple of trees on fire. At least three people were moving around, more likely four and possibly more, all of whom smelled like shifters. There were scents she didn't immediately recognize, but there was at least one wolf shifter. Another spell whizzed over her head, and she instinctively ducked further into the snow. She was directly in the crossfire of whatever this was, but given that none of the attack seemed directed at her, the attackers must have been here to ambush Liam. There was no way she could get up and help him at this rate, so Maggie screwed her eyes shut, willed her physical and emotional exhaustion aside, and let her breath out in one big whoosh as she cast a stasis spell with a huge radius. Everything froze between one heartbeat and the next. Maggie let herself take a couple more breaths, pulling strength, even if it was only a mental trick, from the cold, clean scent of the snow under her before getting to her knees, then to her feet. Time to figure out what the hell was going on. She turned in a full circle, carefully avoiding the bolt of magic above her. She found Liam hunkered down behind a big oak tree in wolf form. He didn't seem too badly hurt, but he was bleeding from a slash across his right foreleg. There didn't seem to be any other wolf shifters nearby, which probably meant Liam had come alone, as he'd told Maggie. Well, at least she knew he was keeping his word. That was something, right? She turned away from him, looking for his attackers. They weren't hard to find. There were three of them, all in human form, despite smelling strongly of shifter magic. Two of the burly men with heavy black beards, brothers maybe, wielded weapons. One had a lumber axe, and one a sledgehammer, each large and weighty. Looking closer, Maggie found the source of one of the smells she hadn't identified. The weapons?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?